I think that meant, I think you guys know me too well. I don't know. So this is kind of neat up here. I mean, I can see what time it is. I better stretch this out or else you'll have to listen to me sing. And I don't think anybody wants that. And I'm here because Mike asked me. He's busy. I saw a picture of him and Alice boogie boarding in France. So I guess he's busy. he had asked me to speak at the men's retreat. And so I gave a little presentation. And then he asked me to do it again. So if you were at the men's retreat and you've heard this before, feel free to just snooze for a half an hour because you've heard this already. I told my wife I was going to start this out with a joke, and she goes, oh, no. But I got this joke book for Christmas, and I think this is one of the ones I can tell in church. So, anyway, here we go. Think about this. It is pouring rain in the floodplain of the Mississippi Valley, and the rising river begins to threaten homes, including that of the local preacher. When water floods into the ground floor, a rowboat with police comes by, and the officer shouts, "Let us evacuate you. The water level is getting dangerous." The preacher replies, "No, thank you. I am a righteous man who trusts in the Almighty, and I am confident he will deliver me." 3 hours go by and the rains intensify, at which point the preacher is forced up to the second floor of his house. A second police rowboat comes by and the officer shouts, "Now let us evacuate you. The water level is getting dangerous." The preacher replies, "No, thank you. I am a righteous man who trusts in the Almighty, and I am confident he will deliver me." The rain keeps coming, and the preacher is forced onto the roof of his house. A helicopter flies over, and the officer shouts down, "Please grab the rope, and we'll pull you up. You're in terrible danger." The preacher replies, "No, thank you. I am a righteous man who trusts in the Almighty, and I am confident he will deliver me." The deluge continues. The preacher is swept off the roof, carried away in the current, and drowns. He goes up to heaven, and at the pearly gates he is admitted and comes before God. The preacher asks, "Dear Lord, I don't understand. I've been a righteous and observant person my whole life, and I depended on you to save me in my hour of need. Where were you?" And the Lord answers, "I sent two boats and a helicopter. What more do you want?" Okay. And now to the real stuff. You know, everybody has something they like to do on Saturday, unless you're retired, and then every day is like a Saturday. But Saturdays are kind of important. And, you know, maybe it's go and play in a soccer match, or maybe it's go out with your friends, or, John, maybe it's go fishing on Saturday, or if Kevin were here, it would probably be go play golf. Any number of things to do, maybe even work in the yard. You know, it's just Saturday is a day to do something special and maybe be with your friends. And so it was on a Saturday that I was hanging out with my friends over in Spokane. And it was something that I'd done Saturday after Saturday with them. It was race finish sports cars. And I remember having a chicken taco for lunch in the pits. And then I remember waking up in the hospital. And this nice lady was there with me, and I said, "What happened?" And she told me. And I got to thinking, boy, it's a good thing I woke up. You know, what would happen if the last thing I remembered was that chicken taco? I mean, kind of puts a fright in you. And so I ended up spending, what was it, about 3 weeks over there in the hospital. And I remember one day I was lying there thinking, God must have something in mind for me because he kept me around. Because after I learned what had happened, it would have really been easy to just have it end right there. So I got to kind of thinking, you know, you think about your own mortality and talk to God a little more because there's not a whole lot to do. But I started thinking about things and, you know, where things were headed. Anyway, just a little history on me. I'm a recovering engineer, and I worked for a truck company, Kenworth Truck Company, for 23 years, and then I had the fortune to go and work with my best friend, Wally Carruthers, at his medical device company, and I worked there for about 10 years. And Wally entrusted his baby to me and the management team, and we grew it and eventually put together a sale, and so you know, I had a chance to see all kinds of things within a company. I'm not a financial guy. Like I said, I'm an engineer, but you know, sometimes you got to understand finances, and we had a real good financial person that was on staff, Sandy Keenan, and so she kind of kept me out of trouble, but I learned a little bit about accounts, you know, and in business, two important ones are your accounts payable and your accounts receivable. You know, your accounts payable are the ones where you owe somebody money because you bought something from them and they want the money back. And usually, if you're fortunate, they give you 30-day terms so you don't have to pay it right away. So you got a little bit of time. But you want to make sure you manage that account and not get behind in it because that's how companies go under. And the other important account is your accounts receivable. And that's the one where somebody's bought something from you and you want to get paid. I mean, hey, I bought materials and I paid for labor and we put this stuff together and you know, now I need to get money so I can pay my people and pay these people that we bought money from, these vendors. And so you want to keep those current too. And I had a friend that says, you know, after 60 days, a guy ceases to become a customer and he becomes a debtor. Well, you know, we'd work with our customers, but we tried to keep current on those accounts. So you have to manage those accounts, and a lot of that is managing your relationship with them. So I want to talk this morning about three accounts that we have in our lives. I call them accounts. They're really more like relationships, but you have to manage them just like you'd manage an account. Back when I was a younger man, there was a popular song that the Beatles came out with, but I liked the Joe Cocker version better. And the lyrics, I won't sing it. You know, I might be able to sing a little better than Joe Cocker, but the lyrics go like this. What would you do if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears, and I'll sing you a song, and I'll try not to sing out of key. I get by with a little help from my friends. I'm going to try with a little help from my friends. And so the first account that I'm going to talk about is what I call the neighbor's account. And so there I am lying in the hospital in Spokane, and all of a sudden my neighbor account starts to go out of balance because the guys at the track, you know, I mean, I'm not there. Pat's not there. She's in the hospital. My trailer, my truck's over there, what's left of my race car and all my gear's there. Guys at the track, they put everything in the trailer, and then lo and behold, guys named Bill Simer and Brian Westmoreland, they haul this everything out to Bill's place where he's got a shop, and they lock it up. And they get the truck to Pat. So she's got a way to drive around because she rode to the hospital in the ambulance with me. So all of a sudden, you know, here are these guys that I've raced with on Saturdays, and we've gotten to know each other well, and we've helped each other in the pits. They're just doing what good friends do, is helping put my toys away. So, you know, at the end of the day, Sunday, everybody's gone and the racetrack is empty, and the last thing you want is your stuff sitting out there. So that was the first thing. And then another guy, Jerry Snow, you know, Pat was we had a room out at the casino, which is right next to the track, but it became obvious that she was going to be in town a little longer than, you know, Monday. And so Gary Snow says, hey, we've got a guest room, and we're, what is it, like a half mile from the hospital? Why don't you come and stay with us? So she goes down there, and she'd spend her days with me in the hospital, and then she'd go home at night, and they'd have a glass of wine ready for her and some chocolate. And I mean, this is really kind of nice. It's great to have friends like that. Another guy, this is a little pun, his name is Stephen Guy. He's a good friend of mine. We raced together an awful lot, had some good races. I think he was there almost every day in the hospital to see me. And that's when I figured out, I thought I had two TVs on the wall, but they were both stuck on the same channel. That's when I all of a sudden realized I had double vision, you know. And one was over here and the other one was over here. And we tried for the likes of us to get two different channels, but it didn't work. But he was another friend that stuck by me. And then there's another guy named Ken Dye. He realized that Pat was getting tired of driving a pickup truck around, so he came up with our daughter Krista, got our Highlander, drove it over to Spokane, got my truck and my trailer, hauled those back to Puyallup where his shop is, locked them up there, and then called me and said, hey, I got your stuff, it's locked up, it's okay, and oh, by the way, Krista's got some races coming up. She wasn't over in Spokane with us, but she's got some races. I'll take care of her car for the rest of the year. And I said, oh, thank you so much. You know, what do I owe you for that? And he said, nothing. This is a guy whose business is hauling race cars around and getting them prepped for races. And he says, I'll just do it for free. So, okay, that account is really going out of sync now. But wait, there's more. I get home, and after three weeks over in Spokane and then like another 3 weeks over here in Providence and Everett, I get home, but I can't go up downstairs. And so I got my friend next door, Jasmine. She's 4. And I'm Uncle Jim, and Pat's Auntie Pat. And Jasmine just got a new bed, you know, the kind without the fences around it, you know. But she thought, Uncle Jim needs to use my bed. So for, I guess, about 3 weeks, I was down in our dining room because I didn't have to go up and downstairs. And Jasmine let me use her bed, brand new bed. So she's a sweetheart. And then things just kept coming. The Carls, they decided that they wanted to help, and our ditch needed to be weeded, so they came over and pulled weeds. You remember that? Because I wasn't pulling weeds. I couldn't even stand up, let alone bend over and pull weeds. And then the Queen of Woodinville, Kay Lewis, called up, and she said, I want to do something for you. And I'm thinking, okay, you know, what does Kay want? And this is kind of a guy deal, you know. You think, oh, I got all these people help me. I don't really need help. I just, you know, I can handle this myself. And it's kind of retrogressing here. When Pat and I were first married, we'd go to dinner with her folks, and her dad and I would have these big discussions at the end of who's going to pay the bill. You know, and it was kind of like this manly thing to do, is argue over who's picking up the tab and all that stuff. And I guess I thought that was what you were supposed to do. Well, anyway, Kay taught me one very important thing. And finally, I said, you know, hey, you know, I could really use some help in my garage. Because I had stuff all over. When I left to go to Spokane, I had stuff I just stuffed in the garage, and now I couldn't get cars back in there, at least daily drivers in there. So Kay and Pat, I was sitting in my little wheelchair, and they helped.
They're like, you're sitting in that
Yeah. Well, Kay started to help me sort out race car parts and, you know, put these in this box because those go with Krista's car, those go with my car. These are the ones, obviously, I'm not going to drive anymore. So, you know, and so we got them all sorted out. And lo and behold, at the end of a couple of days, we had enough room in the garage where we could get two daily driver cars in there and get them out of the weather. And that was the first time in a long time that had happened. But what I really learned from her was, you know, when people come and want to offer you something, they want to give you a gift, whether it's time or food or something like that, you don't dishonor the gift. I mean, even if you think, well, I can do that, I don't need help, say, yeah, I'd really appreciate that. And so that was a big, big takeaway that I had from the Queen of Woodinville. She taught me to honor the gift. So when Toby and Ryan said, hey, what can we do to help? I had a trailer that I'd moved around the back. It was a little tent trailer I'd moved around by hand. Of course, I'm now graduated to a walker. But How do you move a trailer around by hand with when you're using a walker? It doesn't work. So they came over one Sunday after church and hauled it out in front. And Toby said, what are you going to do with this? I said, well, I'm going to try to get rid of it or sell it or something because we don't use it anymore. He said, well, it's all covered with moss. I'll bring my pressure washer over and clean it for you. And so he did that. And so we got rid of that. Again, it's something that I would have said, I can deal with it. But no, it was... Somebody wanted to help. Somebody wanted to give me a gift, and so they did. And for those of you that brought over meals, for those of you that just said, hey, I want to come over and talk and spend some time with you, thank you so much, because that was a big gift for me, and that helped me through this. Of course, my neighbor's account is going way out of balance. So how do I get that back in balance? Well, you know, now that I'm back on my feet, I culture these relationships. You know, if somebody needs something, I'll help them. You know, I try to be the best Uncle Jim that Jasmine's ever had. Of course, she's got another one. She's got two, so I got competition there. But, you know, if somebody needs some help, like if Dale calls up and says, hey, I need somebody to come over and help move some gravel at the church, you know, we'll put it in wheelbarrows and haul around, I'll do that because I can do that now. And I got a truck, and we moved bark, and we moved junk for the neighborhood. And so I'm trying to manage that account and get it back up on keel. I don't know if I'll ever get there, but it sure is fun trying. And so it's more along the lines of managing relationships, you know, being a part of other people's lives, being there when they need something, whether it's emotional support, monetary support, physical support, just help hauling stuff to the dump, you know. That's kind of what I'm doing. Okay, I still got 20 minutes. Get ready, you might hear some ugly singing. That's Joe Cocker. All right, thank you. I was wondering if that was going to come up. Okay, the second account that I was thinking about is the family account. You know, this is different than the neighbor account. It's kind of the same, but, you know, when I was lying in the bed flat on my back in Spokane, my son flew over and spent a day there with me. And this was a kind of a crazy time in his life because they were just in the midst of moving to Alaska. And he was going to go up and assume a new command position up there. And so this is not in the plans, but he came over and did it anyway. And that meant a lot to me. And when I got home, my daughter came and, you know, I needed somebody around me like 24 hours a day, every day of the week. And so she'd come over and kind of sit with me. And I remember one time, maybe I don't remember. I got up and fell flat on my face on the floor, and she couldn't help me up, and Pat couldn't help me up. So they both got the 9/11 guys to come and help me. We got to know each other fairly well, the 9/11 guys. And so, you know, just having family around was a big part of recovery. But the one real trooper was my wife, Pat. And, you know, when you think about it, she was Mrs. Uber for 15 months. So if I needed to go someplace for a doctor's appointment or a meeting or something like that, guess who got to drive me? Because I wasn't driving. And early on, you know, there are a lot of things that you take for granted that I needed help with. You know, getting into bed by myself, getting out of bed, taking a shower. I remember sitting in a chair and having somebody scrub my back because I couldn't reach it. And, oh gosh, you know, putting up with some nutcase who's seeing strange people in the house and wanting to call the police because he thought somebody was murdered in the living room. I went through this phase of dementia that has really given me an appreciation for people that have mental issues, but also gave me a little bit better appreciation for the people that have to put up with guys that have mental dementia. So she did that, and doing all the other stuff and taking care of me. And I can't remember who you said this to once. I don't know. She, in a moment of frustration, she said, "I didn't sign up for this." And then she caught herself and said, "Yeah, I did. I really did." And so, you know, that's an account that, or a relationship that we've had for over 50 years. And I'm glad that I invested and managed in that account, because when I needed the help, she was there. So now, I got to figure out how to bring that account back into balance, and that's trying to be as good a husband as I can be. You know, every marriage you got, you know, your spouse does something that drives you nuts, and I know I'm really good at that. And she puts up with it, and I've, you know, I look and I say, well, you know, when she does something that I don't agree, or, you know, maybe I don't hear her, and, I, you know, I say, okay, she was there for 15 months doing this stuff. She's still there. Help me out. So a little grace is in order, and, you know, let's not make a big deal about this. I still get grumpy at times. I got to go, be careful. Don't go there. So anyway, that's your family account, and that's something that we all need to manage very well, very closely, and make sure that it doesn't get out of balance. I mean, we don't want to be givers all the time. We don't want to be takers all the time, but there's a balance that works. So what do you think the third account is? Well, I thought it was my account with God. And that's a tough one. How do you manage that one? You know, especially if you want to keep it on an even balance. You know, you want to take too much, don't want to give too much. Well, Paul gives us some advice on this, on how you deal with that. Philippians 3, kind of second half of 4 through verse 9. If someone else thinks they have reason to put confidence in the flesh, I have more. Circumcised on the eighth day, of the people of Israel, of the tribe of Benjamin, a Hebrew of Hebrews, in regard to the law, a Pharisee. As for zeal, persecuting the church, as for righteousness based on the law, faultless. In other words, he had it all. He was doing everything in the Jewish culture to have that relationship with God. But then he goes on, he says, but whatever gains to me I consider now consider loss for the sake of Christ. What is more, I consider everything a loss because of the surpassing worth of knowing Christ Jesus my Lord. For those whose sake I've lost all things, I consider them garbage. That's kind of a nice way of saying it. If you read other versions, and Mark can tell you his favorite one, but it's not garbage. I guess it's kind of like the stuff at the bottom of your septic tank. And that's what Paul called it. It's really worth nothing. I consider them garbage that I may gain Christ and be found in him, not having a righteousness of my own that comes from the law, but that which is through faith in Christ, the righteousness that comes from God on the basis of faith. And then in Ephesians 2, 8 through 9, he says, "For it is by grace you have been saved through faith, and this is not from yourselves. It is the gift of God, not by works, so that no one can boast." So, what did I say about the gift? You know, you got to honor the gift. If somebody wants to give you something and they really are sincere, you need to honor it. So, like the pastor that said no to the boats and no to the helicopters, we're going to end up at the pearly gates and we're going to stand before God at some point in time. I think somebody said life is a terminal disease, so we're all going to end up dying. And if we believe in the Bible, we're going to stand before God. And so when God has got this list, and it's your accounts payable list, and he knows everything that's on there, how are you going to manage that account? Well, the only way is if you've accepted Jesus as your Savior. He'll be standing next to you, and he'll say, "I'm picking up the bill on this one. I've got the tab on this one. I've got it covered." And I'll tell you, that's not somebody I'm going to argue with on that one. You know, I'm not going to say I can pay the bill. No, you can't. That's the only way. So those are the three accounts that I'm working on. There may be more, there may be less, but my neighborhood account, my family account, and my account with God. And again, you can substitute the term relationship, my relationship with my neighbors, you all, my relationship with my family, and my relationship with God. And I guess that's what I come away with from this whole thing, is how do I manage all of those? And I'm working on it. So, I think that's all I've got. I could tell you more jokes, but I don't know if any of them are any good. So, I guess I make eye contact and say, "Sherry, it's time to come up and finish this up." And then...